Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. It's great to see all of you guys here this morning. I want to welcome all of our campuses. Happy Mother's Day to all of our moms, right? Y'all had a good morning so far? What, this old thing, right? I do want to say happy Mother's Day to all of you guys. For real, that's like a sincere thing. I've seemed to have distracted everybody. But the truth is, today is Mother's Day, and I've already like called my mom last night to make sure she understood the reality of who loves her best and all that kind of stuff. I have two brothers, one older, one younger. If you're a middle child, you understand that the middle children are always the favorite, right? And so my mom gave this to me a few years ago as a token of her love for me. And so I decided what better way to honor my mom than to remind her of a simple truth. Now, here's the interesting thing. James chapter 3 says this, because you can imagine if I posted a picture of me with this on Instagram or something, you can imagine how my brothers would respond. So this is James 3:16. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be every disorder and every evil, or there will be disorder and every evil practice. And you know what I've just done? I've just made Mother's Day about me. Now think about this, because this is what we've been talking about for the last, I'm going to take this off because this will be distracting the rest of the time. And plus, my brothers will start disorder and every evil practice will surely okay. You don't even take a shirt off, you feel like your hair is everywhere. Oh, it is, it doesn't matter. Where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be every disorder, or there's disorder in every other evil, vile practice. And what happens is, and it happens so subtly, I'm just trying to remind my mom of the truth. I'm just trying to honor her in a way that's true and real and right. And blah. And you just make something that was never intended to be about you. And I've wrestled with this over the last really several months, probably several years, if I'm really honest, trying to understand what this idea means. What is it about us that drives us towards self-centeredness? And it's not, if you've not been here, this is the third week of the series. And we've been talking about this idea of understanding how we navigate this crazy world that is so polarized. I mean, you can't even really have conversations anymore about issues, because if you say something, and you're going to get painted in a whole different picture based on two or three things about you. And we've lost the ability to understand really that the root of a lot of the issues that we're facing. And I say we because it's not them, it's us. It's all of us. It's me and it's you. We've been talking about this, and what I'm trying to do is I want us to get to the point where we can talk about the issues in a way that's going to be helpful and productive, to lead our church, to be a part of engaging our culture in a way that really makes a difference. Because we are here, because we believe and we trust, and we walk with Christ to be what he intends for us to be in that. And it's going to require us to let go of some things that are very, very near to us and dear to us, not to let go of them so that they are gone, but to let go of them so that they become redemptive in the hands of God. And we just don't always think like this because we have landed and understand what is true, what is true. And we're going to talk about that, and even now you go, okay, I got these ideas in my head, and there are about four issues politically, socially, economically that I've been wrestling with for really quite some time, and reading about and studying and trying to understand and saying, God, what is it you want me to do? What do you want in this? And it's very difficult because you realize that there are things about all these that I've held on to very tightly and I didn't even know it. And what I've inadvertently done is, even though it was true and it was right, somehow I made it about me. Somehow I was still in the center. And this is where it's really hard for us to sort of break this apart. And I'm gonna try to get you there today to a point where we can look at this, and then we're gonna look at it next week. It's kind of a tease for next week. And I'm going to, so I'll tell you a sweet story about my mom that might be helpful to you. So if you're like, oh, Mother's Day, you'll hear a story about my mom. We can talk about that. But basically what we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks is that where you find your sufficiency, we as human beings are born to be needy. We are born to be dependent. We are born not to be self-sufficient. And we've talked about the fact that where you find your sufficiency is where you will find your center. If you're curious about who you are at the center of your soul, of who you are as a human being, you look to where it is or what it is that you trust for your sufficiency. The thing at the center of us is what draws everything into itself. The thing that you are pulled towards, the thing that really pulls towards you because of what's at the center. That's where you'll find it. And what we've been talking about is the idea that most of us have grown up in a culture that says, hey man, being self-centered is great. You got to sort of pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You got to be your own man or your own woman. You got to be your own person. And in order to do that, you've got to become self-sufficient, not realizing that when you follow your source of sufficiency, you'll find your center. And when you're self-sufficient, guess what happens? You wind up being self-centered. And it's just the way that we've learned to live. And so we've just sort of put ourselves in the center. And this isn't just the greedy, I'll step all over you and on you to get what I want. I think this is much more subversive and effective in our lives. It's a more powerful force in us than what we really think or believe is how fundamentally self-centered we are. And think about this. Think about just in your own life, how do you define problems? Most of us, if we're honest, we define problems by how they affect me or you, right? A problem becomes a problem when it now affects me. And that's how most of us think. We have very little regard for God or for his rights or his image. It's just, how does this affect me and the world in which I want to live? Even some of our noble pursuits are about, I want the world to be better than it is so that my life and my wife and my kids and my family and we will have a better life. Those aren't bad things. It just reveals the center of things. And that's what we want to get to. We've got to get to this place. It's really hard. And it's very, very subversive and hard to detect. So I want us to do this and sort of process this really well. My concerns for this series are twofold. Number one is I want for me personally and for you personally. I want for you to understand the world around you in a way that allows you to interact with it. It allows you to interact with people who aren't like you or who don't think like you or who don't believe like you. I think that's really important. What we have done in our culture is we've created these poles. And the reason I believe for this is because of this curse of self-centeredness. And what happens to a self-centered person is you begin to demand that the whole world orbit around you. Do you know anybody like that? He's like, yeah, it's you and it's me. We demand that the whole world revolve around us. And guess what everybody else is doing to you? You're demanding that the world revolve around you, and they're demanding that the world revolve around them. And when those two things get together, it's like the opposite poles on a magnet, and they just push apart and push apart and push apart. You see, what I've come to believe, and the issues that we face in our culture are extremely important. I don't want you to hear me saying they're not. But we will never address them until we address the center. And I'm going to try to help you see that over the next 2 weeks. That's my goal. So goal one, personally. Goal two, corporately. How do we as the church engage the culture? How do we become salt and light in a way that makes a difference, in a way that actually does what God has intended for us to do, to think redemptively about the world around us and not, because it's tempting to just say the whole world, we're going to withdraw and just be moral and nice and kind and forget it. And that is not what the kingdom of God is about. So that's it. I believe that the madness in the world results or stems from fundamental distrust. We've grown up in the world, and all of us are looking for something that we can trust. We find nothing, and so we resort to finding our sufficiency or trusting in other things, which ultimately is simply we just trust ourselves. That's what we learn, and it creates madness. Your heart is looking for something you can depend on, something you can trust, something can support the weight of your, you know, giving of yourself to it. And that's the way we're made. And so interestingly enough, we live in a world, these are all kind of observations. We live in a world that has the power to make you think and feel whatever they want. I don't know if you've thought about this. So much of what we think and feel is brought to us by the world around us. It's not stuff that we've actually thought about or calculated or submitted, say, God, how are you in this? It's just what we think and what we feel, and it comes at us all the time. Most of us, we're just running too fast in order for us to slow down. We talked this last week, the narrow way, right? So the entering through the narrow way, the interesting thing about the narrow way, if you were here last week, is that the narrow way isn't some tightrope you have to walk to get God's favor. The narrow way is a way in which you enter in. The narrow way is himself, Jesus, that we enter in to find life. And in order to enter in through a narrow gate is what it is. You have to slow down and you have to submit. There is one way to go through to open up the life that God has for us. We talk about this idea of slowing down. One of the things that I've come to believe is that information is no longer the problem. People want more and more information. They're Googling stuff. They're looking for stuff. They're watching more messages. They're watching this. Information is not the problem. I think pace is. We run so fast that everything is just sound bites in our head. It doesn't ever make it to our heart. And not only that, but I think even the other thought, maybe the flip side of this, is think about your emotional speed, right? Be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to become angry. That's what the book of James teaches us. And how do you emotionally? I mean, think about what's happening. Everything's so heightened, the news, the this, that, everything is so heightened. We find ourselves pulling to our position, to pull into our way, pulling the way we want things to be. And whenever someone says something, it's like a hair trigger on our emotions. And we go from 0 to 100. We don't know how to slow down our emotions about things. So we bounce from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing to thing to thing. And so we read in this in 1 John chapter 2. It says, do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. We've looked at this. And I've been reflecting on this for probably 3 or 4 months, trying to understand what this means, because we, especially on Mother's Day, you're like, well, I love my mom. She's in the world. God must not love me. So what do I do? Mom, sorry. Mother's Day is like, can't do it. It's the world. I love my kids. I love my job. I enjoy things. How is it that we can do that and not be at odds with God? He uses the word love. Do not love the world. If you love the world, the love of the Father is not in you. Love is fundamentally about a relationship. He's talking about your relationship with God or your relationship with the world. And the currency of love is trust. He's talking about the idea that what is it that we trust? This is what your heart is longing for. Are you going to trust the things of this world? Or are you going to trust the things of God? Is he going to be your source? Or is this world going to be your source for life and identity and fullness and freedom? If you reverse it, right? If you reverse it and you say, if we love the Father, the love of the world is not in us, all of a sudden it sounds freeing. If you love God, the love of the world is not in you. You're free from these things. So what is in the world? Look at this. For all that is in the world, the desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life is not from the Father, but from the world. Now, whenever I encounter verses like this in the Bible, what I do is, and I get out my journal, right? I get out my journal and my pen, and I write these three things, and it's back here somewhere, this list. The desires of the flesh, the desires of the eyes, and the pride of life. 1, 2, 3. And I put my pen down, and I go, what are they? And how do they relate to each other? Is this a progression? You start off like, and then there? Like, is it a progression, or is there something else? And so I write them down in a lot of different ways. I just write them across the page. And so as I noodle on this, I begin to realize a couple of things. But he talks about the idea that there's the lust of the flesh or the desires of the flesh. Now, those are exactly what you think that they are. The lust of the flesh, they certainly, they're not limited to, but they certainly have the idea of sexual desire in its, the things that we're gonna just use and grab to gratify that part. No matter what it is, this just this ungoverned just drive for whatever we want when it comes to just what our bodies crave or demand. And then we have the lust of the eyes. And I began to wonder about this. What are the lusts of the eyes? These are the things we look around and we see that we decide that we want and we're going to orient our lives towards. It's interesting that both of these things really reside on the condition that we don't have it. We don't have it. And so I began to think, what's the connection between these two things? And my first thought was, I'm not sure which one comes first. And I thought, or am I? And I wouldn't guarantee this, but this is my thinking. And the reason it's my thinking is because of what happened in Genesis 1, 2, and 3. I'll talk to you about that in just a minute. But what I think happens is it starts with something that we see and that awakens something in us, some desire that we didn't know was there. And all of a sudden that desire is awakened, and guess what happens to us? We just start looking for it everywhere. And the more we look for it, the more it begins to drive. And the more we're driven, the more we look, right? This is me playing golf last week and watching them play golf over and over and over again. This cannot be that hard. Remember we said about the easy way, the hard way? The reason the hard way is hard is because it is hard to be true to what is true. I want you to think about your own world, the things that you don't have. It's always interesting. For most of my life, from like 16 to like 35, all I wanted was a Jeep, a Wrangler, like no top. And guess what you see everywhere? They're everywhere. Everybody drives a Jeep except me. Because we get our eyes set on something. And what does that do? Whenever you see people with stuff that you have or don't have that you want, does it make you less inclined to want it or more inclined to want it, right? And it just creates this cycle. You get into more of the devious things where it's sexuality or this idea of escape. And all of a sudden you see exactly how addiction begins to unfold because it just consumes us. These things are not of the Father. So there's two of the three. What is this other? And some versions say it's the boastful pride of life. And the word life isn't just that you're alive. It's kind of the stuff that makes you feel alive. You might want to say it's the goods. Whereas this side over here seems to be about the things that you want but don't have, this thing over here seems about the things that you get. I got the goods. And it fuels pride. And pride is never satisfied. And it just simply says, I need more of what I've already got. This is self-sufficiency at its root. I'm in control of my life. Interestingly enough, the temptation in the garden was, Eve looked at this, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, interestingly enough. I've always wondered that. What is this about? And she said, oh, it is delightful to the eyes. And it has the power to make one wise. And what eventually happened was it separated them and said, I can do this myself. They ate, and someone told me in the first service, they said, this kind of looks like the apple that we ate from. We ate from the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. You ever thought about this? You ever considered that you have information that you were never intended to have? We did that. That's what we did to ourselves. And here's the way it plays out modern. Do you know an 11-year-old kid who has information about the world that he is not equipped to handle at 11? Do you know anybody like that? You ever talk to the next generation about the stuff that they deal with and understand? Do you realize they have at their disposal on their phones 24 hours a day, the stuff that we didn't see until we were 20, 21, 22, some of us older than that. And it's all the time. The world can make you think and feel whatever it wants. So what do we do? Like, how do we learn? Because there's so many things that need to be addressed in this. our intolerance of distrust in our souls, you're intolerant of not trusting something, will force you to trust things that aren't trustworthy. It will force you to trust things that aren't trustworthy. You want to look and understand what it is that you trust. So begin to think, what it looks like is we get pulled in one of these two directions. And as I thought about this, what I think, if my, and this is where we can sort of, you can disagree with me, because this is my hypothesis, that if whatever's at the center sucks everything to itself, we're actually not being lured away. We're drawing them in based on whatever it is that we are trusting for our lives. Even over here, what you're saying is, if I can just escape and live in fantasy land for long enough, I'm pulling it to myself because I trust that. The center is pulling it to itself, which is our own selves. And the same thing is true. The more we can fuel this, and eventually something is going to break. Something's not going to work anymore. And oftentimes, it's too late. Our culture lives off of sort of this hypersexualization and overstimulation that just keeps so many of us here. Everything is driven like this. And it's so amazing. You know, we were in India, I think I told you this a couple weeks ago, and India is an extraordinarily modest culture. Everyone is covered all the time. You don't realize how immodest we are in the West until you've been somewhere and you come back and you're like, oh my gosh, nobody's wearing clothes. It's like, what in the world? And we've got this idea, this thing that's happening. It just continues to, we find our, all this stuff. And then when you get it, it just creates these loops and these cycles that keep us stuck over and over, just fueling, trusting ourselves, hoping. And the pressure is enormous. This is why some of you are just imploding, because you've taken all this on yourself. You have nowhere reliable for your trust to rest. Proverbs 14:3 says, there is a way that seems right to man, but in the end, it is death. So what do we do? I'm going to take a few minutes and try and see if I can say, this is what I want us to do. James chapter 4, it says, don't you know that to be friends of the world is to be enemies with God? Right, remember this, was last week. Or do you not suppose that it is to no avail that God said, I've called you with a purpose and I'm not gonna let go of my purpose very easily. I'm very stubborn about why I've created you. That's Mike's translation of it. I'm very stubborn as to why I created you. I'm not letting that purpose go very easily, but I give grace. That's why I have said that God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. You know how you get grace? You get grace by giving up yourself. That's the narrow way. It is hard to trust what is true, or it's hard to stay true to what is true. It's hard. And it requires something more than just our intellect or just our ability to pick positions. See, the problem with this one over here is easy to go, oh, I see where that's bad. This one over here is a little more difficult because there are people who are right about the issues in all the wrong ways. You ever met anybody who's right in all the wrong ways? It's on both sides of any issue you find. I mean, you know, it's so funny because I was thinking about this, and you know, you've got liberals and you got liberals and the Democrats, and you got conservatives and Republicans. You got these two sort of poles that are always fighting with each other, aren't going to agree on anything, and you got this thing going on in our culture. And what begins to happen if you watch really carefully? What you'll happen, because the reality is, if you really pay attention, there's truth on both sides. There are things that are right on both sides, and some go, "No way!" It's part of the problem. The problem isn't who's right about what. The problem is we have taken and used our being right as a platform for being superior. This is what the world does. God opposes the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. He opposes the proud. When we take an issue and we say, I'm right on this, and because I'm right on this, it makes me superior. And it happens very, very quickly. mean, think about it. Test yourself. Whenever someone says something in an argument that you disagree with, how badly do you want to put them in their place? If you do, you're standing in opposition to God. You know how many times I've stood there? This past week? It happens. It happens so fast. So as I began to think about this, there's a difference between, we have been commanded to exercise authority over this earth. And authority and superiority are two different things. We're going to talk more about that. So here's what I want you to do. Here's what I want you to do. Number one, I want for you to understand. Oops. To understand what's true. Many of you know my love for the 80s, the greatest decade ever. I grew up in the 80s. I had a mullet. I had a great mullet. I had a jean jacket. And I had an encounter with my mother probably in 1987. I was 17 years old. Awesome. Didn't see that one coming. I was like, did I say something funny? No, I just look funny. Okay, now hold on. In fairness, people say, Mike, you're going to regret that. I still want my hair to look like that, to be honest. I just have a wife and two kids, two girls. We're like, it ain't ever going to happen. So that was my mullet. It was a glorious mullet. I had a jean jacket. I encountered my mom in 1987. Now, my mom, you got to understand, my mom, we have two brothers, older brother, younger brother. I'm the smallest one. And my mom is 4'11". And she is, my dad calls her Itty Bit, and it is a perfect name. And I remember, my mom was just kind of a rock in our family all the years growing up. And I remember every morning we would get up, and we'd go to breakfast. We'd leave our bedrooms and pass mom and dad's room on the way to the kitchen to get breakfast. We used to eat breakfast and we'd watch Three Stooges, which just dawned on me in the 9 o'clock service that we have three brothers and my dad made us watch the Three Stooges. I thought, oh, 40 years later, like, makes sense. And so we walked past her room, and every morning I recall, I remember walking by my mom's room and seeing her in her bed reading the Bible. I remember her telling me often that she prayed for me, and I know that she did. And so there was this sense about my mom that you just kind of knew it was real, even though you didn't argue with her or badger with her a lot. And my mom's a pretty good kid. My mom raised me, you know, be polite and all that kind of stuff. And I had kind of a couple of issues. One was my hair, and the other was I loved hairband music. And I don't know how you guys love hairbands, like Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, you know, I loved Poison. I loved, you know, some of you are like going back in your minds and you're like, yes. In fact, sometimes I hear songs from the 80s and like, I cannot believe the words to the songs. And what's worse is I still know every word. Some of you kids who are like going, and this is going to sound like an old man, I get it. You're like, I listen to it for the music. No, you don't. Because 25 years from now, you'll know every single word. They ain't going away. They just get in there. They just eat your mind. That's what they do. So all this stuff is in my head. And where was I? Oh, so I loved 80s music. And so one of my favorite bands, and this I'm going to go wait on some of y'all's list, but I loved Motley Crue. See, like some people are like, oh, and some people are like, oh. I'm never coming out of this church again. But I loved Motley Crue, and I wanted to go see Motley Crue in concert. So my mom had raised me really, really well. And so she taught me to be gracious to people. She taught me whenever someone does something kind for you, you receive it with gratitude, and you just say thank you and accept it. And I also knew that she was not going to be too keen on me going to the Motley Crue concert. So I had a friend buy tickets and give them to me for my birthday. You see where this is going, right? Mom taught me to be gracious and to receive whatever someone offers me with gratitude and humility. And I can do that. Thank you very much. So I come home. I remember this like it was yesterday. We were in the laundry room where the washer and dryer were. My mom was standing there. I said, "Hey, Mom." She said, "Hey, Michael." She calls me Michael because I'm her favorite. "Hey, Michael." And I said, I said, "Hey, somebody gave me an early birthday present." She said, "Oh, that's great." I said, "And you've taught me to always receive something with humility and grace and be grateful for when people do things for you. That is true. It is true. It is 100% true and right. And Mom, you've always told me to do that, and I want to honor you in that. It is true. 100% true. You've taught me this. I want to honor you." Oh, what mom would not love for their kid to say that? Not about this wedding, Mother's Day. It's just like a normal day. You know what the problem was? Guess who's in the center? "Hey, Mom. Receive this humility and gratitude. I want to honor you. You've taught me so well. A friend gave me Motley Crue tickets for my birthday." My mom, actually, she's about this tall. She said, "Oh, that's nice. No lecture, no, I'm so disappointed in you. I can't believe you're going to." She said, "Do you think that's what God would want you to do?" Well, this was going real well a second ago, right? I said, "Oh, yeah, about those tickets." So I went back to school the next day, and I sold them. Yeah, it wasn't as glory. I mean, it was not like wholeheartedly. It was like, ugh. It actually was a pretty pivotal moment in my own relationship with the Lord and my relationship with some of the things in the world because of that encounter. Here's what I want for you to get. Because what you have to do is, number one, is you have to understand what is true. You have to understand what is true. And the second thing is then you surrender what's true to the truth. It is so deceptive at times when we are banking our whole lives on what it's true and we never stop to realize who's actually in the center. When Jesus said, "I am the way, I am the truth," it wasn't an overstatement. He was saying, you want to understand what to do with what is true, you bring it to me. It's interesting, we live in the United States of America, we live in a country and a culture, we've been called to have impact, but the way in which the church moves forward is in this thing called the kingdom of God. And the kingdom of God has a king. A king. Jesus isn't asking us if we think this is a good idea. He's not even asking us to use his good ideas to make sure that we get our ideas across. He's asking us to understand what is true for the sake of our own hearts and our own minds and our own souls. And then he asks us to bring it to him, to bow a knee to him and say, "Whatever you want, I will do." He is a king, a king. Now, I say this because what's, you know, someone said, "So what do we do with our issues?" I'm going to tell you next week. Here's why. Because you're going to start angling. Where's Mike going? Is he going to validate my point? Because we are in the center all the time and way too often. I guess way too often, probably all the time. And we don't even know it. The only person who can do that is when you come to the truth, to Him. And you say, what do you want me to do with this? So here's what I want you to do. I want for you to understand what's true. I think you ought to do the work. You ought to sit down with every issue that you face, everything that you hear on the TV and everything that you hear, and you need to sit down and say, God, you know, search the scriptures, get educated, you know, write your thoughts, get some, you know, get understand these things. And then go, all right, Jesus, it's your kingdom. You're the king. What do you want? Here's why I think it's important. I don't want to go too far. I'm going to stop. Next week is why I think it's important. God, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your grace that you give us, and that grace comes through submission. You oppose the proud. You give grace to the humble. Therefore, we submit ourselves to you. God, my prayer is for all of us as we wrestle with some of the hardest things in our culture, and we want them for really good reasons at times, but that ultimately we would all live in submission to you. God, for those who are here and they just kind of walked in because of mom or whatever reason, they're not really sure what they believe about you, I pray that you would just awaken them, cause them to realize their heart is longing to trust something trustworthy that's not found apart from you. God, I ask that you would do that. I ask that you would do that so that your body, your collection of people would exist in this unity that would cause all of the world to see and to know that Jesus is the King. That's our hope. That's our prayer. And we lift these to you in His name. Amen.